You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started today, I want to let you know about a free resource we're offering. It's an e-booklet called Pipeline: Succession at Every Level. Now, you may have already downloaded Developing Your Leadership Pipeline and walked through that with your staff team. If you have, awesome. This is your next step. Most of the time, when we think about succession, we think about replacing the person at the top. We need to think about, however, reproducing leaders at every level of your ministry. If you're ready to do that, then I would say go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there. Now, let's get on with the podcast. Enjoy.
Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
Wow, that was strong.
What?
It has been a little while since we had one of those. Because of various changes that we outlined in a previous podcast, with me switching roles and schedule changes and general chaos. Yay. And so we are still here. We're back. Don't call it a comeback. Oh, our guest today is Dave, with the German last name, Schroeder, Schroeder, Schrader.
You pick. Which one would you like
today? Schroeder.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. But so Dave is the... He oversees marketing here at B&H Publishers on the trade side of things. So those are all the books that actually sell. I oversee marketing on the academic side, which are all the books that they're a little nichier, let's put it that way. So Dave is responsible for all of our bestsellers and how those became bestsellers.
Hey, you're responsible for bestsellers that are sold because they're on somebody's syllabus.
That's true.
That's true. Very important.
That's right.
Still life changing.
The education of our youth rests in my hands. Be very afraid, America. And seminarians, my favorite people.
I'm excited.
Enough about me. Dave, what do you actually do here? Because I think I might have misrepresented your work.
No, that was pretty good. Yes. Yeah. So we've got a team of marketers that go into a book publishing house. And so that's product marketers. These are digital marketers. These are people who are at events marketing our books. These are publicists and designers that we have as well. So it's a fun group of people.
It's a fun group of people.
Dave can't publish your book. Please don't contact.
No one solicited submissions.
He sells the books. Yeah. Someone else decides which books to.
Devin Maddox.
Thank you.
Shh. Dave.
Quiet.
So no unsolicited proposals of books.
Yes.
I used to do acquisitions, and any time that you would tell somebody you were in publishing, they'd reach into like their satchel, their man purse, and be like, "Well, I have a manuscript for you." I had one about spiritual warfare and NASCAR that somebody pitched to me.
Oh,
that was my all-time favorite.
Yes,
I had to politely decline.
Good timing.
Even though I bet we could have sold some to all the Ricky Bobbies out there. Our subject for the day is about marketing and launching books.
Which is your favorite Jesus? I'm just kidding.
Baby Jesus.
So we're talking about marketing and launching books because in the leadership space, there is sort of this is probably a separate podcast, but there's sort of this pressure on anybody in any leadership position to produce a book. Todd feels it.
Every day.
We actually do this podcast because I couldn't get Todd to write.
And now I'm expected to write.
And now this has built books. A platform, and platform is where books come from, apparently. Yeah. So Dave has a fair amount of experience in marketing. So you're at B&H now. You were at Thomas Nelson for a while. And then were you at B&H before that?
No.
Okay.
I haven't gone and come back. Not the boomerang strategy. No.
Okay.
I'm just taking a tour of the city.
I have been at 3 different publishers now. So there's a decent amount of publishing marketing experience at the table here. And then Todd is our resident aspiring author with all the questions. So that's where we're...
Should I ask all the questions today?
Do you want to ask all the questions? You pose it to the experts. Is this like a panel of two?
It could be.
I can
provide snarky commentary every now and then.
Barnabas isn't allowed to do that?
Oh, no, I can't help myself.
Okay. I can tell you how to tweet through books.
Ooh.
I can sell books in that regard.
That'll fit in. So why don't you go ahead and tee us up with our first question, Todd.
All right.
Todd, the aspiring author.
What are the best ways for authors to develop a platform well being the keyword there, and not in a gross way? Because we all know what that looks like.
I'm not sure that everybody does.
Could you expound upon that a little bit?
Well,
because if everybody knew what it meant, people wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk about an author with emotional intelligence and one without emotional intelligence.
Listeners, you can attach your own names to these as you think of people who fit the categories.
So this would be emotional intelligence is a combination of self-awareness and self-management, social awareness and social management. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, that of course is a quadrant. And were you here, I would draw it on a whiteboard or the nearest window.
And if he doesn't have one of those, he mimes it out on a wall like it's a whiteboard.
It's true.
If you're in a meeting with Todd and he will get up and walk to a blank wall and mime as if it's a whiteboard.
It's really just sad.
a little behind the scenes. So run through those categories one more time.
Social awareness, social management, self-awareness, self-management.
And so people who lack those things build gross platforms.
Yes, especially on the social management piece. These are the people that over-ask, or these are the people that DM you, their book and a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses.
I just got one of those this morning.
these are the people that are extremely self-promoting and don't realize that is off-putting.
Dave, what is gross? Because you, I'm sure, have something in your mind.
Gross is just being what you're not. You know, I think that's it. And that could be a little bit different to different people. But I think what happens is people feel
that's
like...
That's going to make the show notes, Dave. Good job.
That's good.
You just came out.
Thank you. I'm in.
See, that's how you develop a good platform. You say things in tweets.
Oh.
Good job, Dave.
Oh, man.
Crushed it.
Oh, man. Okay, we done? We done? Okay.
Yeah. We're out. The end, folks. Congratulations. Go write a book. All
right. No, I think what happens is people start looking around. They start seeing, okay, what this person's doing and that person's doing. Like, oh, man, well, they're growing a platform. I should do exactly what they're doing. And the problem is that other person they're watching has a style, and it fits them, and it's earned them equity with an audience they're following, but it may not fit who you actually are. And that's where usually problems start, because someone just thinks, okay, that's what it is. It's that simple as that.
Right. And when somebody has success, it becomes a formula. And then usually in the sort of vortex of publishing, if they have success, it then becomes something that they're asked to publish. And so it sort of becomes this self-propagating, you know, platform building kind of thing. And you see it. Everybody knows people who have done this. They've had success on their own and then have been asked to create a formula that they then become sort of a one size fits all. And that's where it gets gross, when you try to, you know, use somebody else's formula, I think.
Oh, totally. And it kind of backs up to people like, well, this is what it takes to get published, period. I mean, it's hard not to address that. They think, well, I have to have that platform to do it. And honestly, every publisher, of course, they want authors, they want people who bring this platform right there, and they want to know, how do you harness it to make a bestseller? But there's a lot of books that every publisher is publishing that they're taking a chance on, or they think, you know, this content is so good, we're going to develop a plan that fits that person to give it a chance to succeed. And I think that's where people get confused these days, because all they do is they feel the noise that's going on right now, but it's not necessarily accurate, because if you look at any bestseller, like, it's got to start somewhere. And there's some, it's the same type of author you see out there. They had a bestseller before and they got another one coming out. But then again, how did a lot of books that became successful, where did that author actually start? They had to start somewhere. And that's not just...
And it usually starts with lots of rejection.
Well, not always. Yeah, you're right. Yay.
Another gross thing would be like actually purchasing a platform. Meaning, okay, so my brother-in-law contacted me because he's in marketing. He's a marketer for like 40 car dealerships. And so they're, you know, wanting to do some influencer marketing. And he's like, hey, can you check out some people for me? And you check out those people and you're like, holy cow. The person has, you know, in their bio, if you read their bio, they're awesome, and they know they're, you know, a guru. And then you do a little homework and you find out, oh, this person has like next to no influence. By the way, if a person has thousands upon thousands upon thousands of followers in any platform and they get no interaction, that's pretty telling.
I think, yes. And often those same people are the ones who are self-declared experts, gurus, you know, ninjas.
That's what
whatever.
Looks like.
In today's market, everyone's an expert.
You know? Which, yeah, and kind of like if everything is awesome, nothing is awesome. If everyone's an expert, no one's an expert. But I think it's one of those things where if your content can't stand on its own, then you're kind of a gross self-promoter. That's
yeah.
All right. Let's hit our second question. What do publishers wish that authors or prospective authors, people who'd like to get published, knew about marketing a book? So kind of what are these things that a publisher would like to say, now here's how to have realistic expectations?
Yeah. You know, in the past, well, it really comes down to, there's no silver bullet. I think they come thinking like, wow, man, publisher, like if I do this, like, and I see this other person who just did it, like, that's it. That's what it takes, right? It's going to be a bestseller. And that may be true for that person, but it doesn't always work every single time. You know, and you can't always just throw money at it, throw the exact same thing. It involves a lot of creativity into saying, what is uniquely you? So you've got to write what you know. You've got to write of what is really that reflects your heart and who you are, because that's really what makes you an expert. It's not, man, I've spent all this time building up this and that. That's nice, but also it has to be genuine. And so they think like, what's it going to deliver then? And honestly, it takes people having humility to recognize that it's going to take a little bit of time. It's going to take a variety of people to be a part of what it makes to happen. And it can't get, I think people just get so caught up on just there's one single thing. Yeah. I can't reiterate that. And that's not how it works.
Well, I think authors, so I've written 3 books and I work in marketing. So I have this interesting perspective on both sides of the author marketing.
Wish you knew about marketing?
Well, thankfully, I was in publishing before I wrote my first book, so I came to it with a different perspective than I think a lot of authors, because I knew the things that had frustrated me on the publisher side because of, authors thinking that, you get questions like, why isn't my book in Barnes & Noble? Why, how much money are you putting into advertising? And all of which are questions that they're valid questions, but also pretty dissatisfying answers. Because, for example, why didn't we put a ton of money into advertising? Because we projected that your book would sell 8,000 copies, which means we only set aside so much money for it. And if we put it into advertising, you would have gotten 2 ads and no other marketing efforts. Those kinds of things. And then I think the other thing is, I recognized a lot of the marketing effort falls on the author. Mm-hmm. But a good publisher is incredibly supportive of the author's efforts. Mm-hmm. So providing creative assets, providing funding for different things, working with them on ideas to take an author's idea and make it even better in terms of whether it's a series of blog posts or videos or any sort of content marketing. But a lot of authors, especially pastors and professors, they hand in their manuscript and they're like, I'm out. That's your job to market the book, which is a quick way to tank your sales. So a lot of the marketing falls on the author.
Yeah. And you hit it right there, because, you go back 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, there was this mentality among authors exactly that. Like, even the wider trade world, like, okay, here's my book. You guys go with it now. Like, whoa, that's not how it works. We got to do this together. I mean, that's where authors have had to adjust and learn a lot more, which I know is difficult. I get it. It may not be marketing, may not be their thing. Mm-hmm. But they've got to jump in.
Well, that's where authors also need to realize that marketing doesn't have to be marketing. It can just be creatively shared content and relationships, those kinds of things, as opposed to, so you don't have to go out there and tweet endlessly, like, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. You can share excerpts of it. You can get friends to share excerpts of it. I mean, if you have friends, they will support you. If you say, hey, here's a blog post or something, would you share this? Can we do podcast interviews? Those kinds of things. Publishers wish authors had a little bit more of that sense, the content marketing sense, as opposed to the, like, I'm not a promotional person, I'm not going to do this attitude that some have.
Yeah, you're right on. And a couple other interesting things. I think there's been success stories in the past few years that have been totally non-traditional. It's not as though a publisher hasn't been involved in some way. I think they come in with some of the right tools to help amplify a message. But, have you guys read The Martian before or seen the movie? A lot of people have seen the movie.
I've read it and seen it. Okay. Really good.
Yeah, it's excellent. Well, I mean, the story of that is Andy Weir, the author, he just started publishing chapters at a time on a blog. and his readers were like, man, I want to hear more. I want to learn more about this character. Like, what happens to him next? And then he hadn't even written the whole book yet. So, like, he was getting instant feedback from people to say, okay, keep writing. So he had this built-up audience that helped him more or less complete the book. And he decided, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just put it on Kindle for 99 cents and just see how it goes once he finished it. It's before a publisher had touched it. And as a matter of fact, just like all these guys, Barnum, as you said earlier, he was rejected by so many. And he just said, let's just get it out there and see what happens.
Fiction is probably the hardest world to get published in.
Oh, man. So many people that do it.
Yeah. And there's, and it's just, there's so many people who do it. There's the failure rate is incredible. Successes are huge, but the failures are the majority. Oh. And there's not a ton of middle ground, like moderate selling novels.
Well, there's a lot of middlemen though.
Yes.
And the middlemen are trying to make money off of aspiring authors or people that, you know, I'm going to get rich off of. Yeah. You know, my latest work
or
children's book. I'm going to write children's books.
But look at the application. But look at the application of it. I mean, look, if you're in leadership in some fashion, you've probably got things you want to share and you want to say that you think's helpful, but you can test out a lot of what you think could become a book. You get instant feedback. Post it as a blog. Here are my five thoughts on this and that.
Isn't that more or less where Tom Rainer's, so he has the series of these short books, I'm a Church Member, mm-hmm. I Will, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. Those were all, like, the seeds of that were in blog posts and podcasts.
Yeah.
And then kind of expanded out into books.
That's exactly it. I mean, like many of his other blogs are written to serve that day.
Yeah.
And they happen to get, overwhelming response. Like, wow, there's something here. They clearly want to hear more on this.
Now, this is going off of this is more about writing and creation. Don't blog to try to get published, because then you're writing a crappy blog. Write the best thing you can write and see if there is something there. Don't write with some formula of trying to be like, this is a chapter of my next book kind of thing. Write it as something it's valuable all by itself and see if it can be developed into book content.
Have you learned that from your own experience too? Like, man, this blog's going to be awesome and it's going to speak to so-and-so and this is probably going to be my next book.
If you live in the internet writing space, it's really easy to write posts that you know will get responses. There are formulas for this stuff. I mean, there's controversy, there's humor, there's lists, there's, you know, these kinds of things. And it's not hard to turn those into something greater, but they're usually, like, they're kind of hollow, empty content. It's why a lot of books, you read the first half, and then the second half, you're like, that wasn't necessary. That was just sort of empty content that filled out the pages. And so that's why I say, you know, you have to write the best thing you can write, and maybe there's a book there, but don't try to formulate it in blog or short form first. I think that misleads. You're misleading yourself in that way.
Okay. I'm going to move us down the road.
Thank you, Todd.
What should authors expect of publishers in marketing a book? And what are unfair expectations?
I'll start with unfair, because I think that's kind of a start. Like, first of all, we don't control the world. Some of us as publishers serve as publishers and retailers. So in other words, we're selling direct, so we can do a little bit of everything. For the most part, it's a bit of a dance. You've got partnerships out there that we're meant to interact with, but also
what kind of dance? I'm just wondering.
It just depends, man.
No touching.
I mean, it can get weird. Yeah.
We're Baptist.
Safety dance. Safety dance.
So, leave room for the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Got to.
Balloon in the middle. It's a partnership. I mean, when you are publishing a book, you've got to look at saying, we're doing this together. You cannot throw everything on the publisher, and the publisher cannot throw everything on you. We said that already, but I cannot stress how important that is. I don't have a success story of anything that doesn't fall in some fashion of that.
Right.
So, I mean, it almost feels like it's kind of this big general thing, but it's also really simple. We're still in kindergarten, guys. We got to play well together and figure out how can we have fun doing this and make an impact. But it also goes back, like, you know, if an author wants to come to the table, well, they've done their research, they've built up some trust within an audience that they bring to the table. To that point, you've written a great book. And in terms of marketing, book marketing, honestly, it's fun. And I don't want to say easy. It just means that people have genuinely responded to this. Yeah. All I'm doing is utilizing the content to get it in front of the right next group of people. So it's recommended well.
Yeah. Can I? I mean, okay. So I have been at the table. I have not, of course, Jennifer Lyle is a counterpart and she runs B&H. I mean, so, but she's extremely insightful. And she does
know publishing and books.
Yeah.
And so just listening to her, I would like to think I've picked up on a thing or two, but it just seems like there's so much. I mean, I grew up in a very agricultural area. And so farming is almost like gambling. And it seems like publishing is almost like gambling because there's stuff that you think you're basically saying, hey, there's all these things. We're betting on these ponies that they're going to be. I'm also from Kentucky, so forgive me for the horse references.
Ponies.
The ponies. But we're betting on these to pay out, and we don't know which ones will or which ones won't. We think the odds are better on this one than that one. But I mean, you know, farmers, they're sowing the seeds that they can and then cultivating as much as possible and praying for rain. Is that not a lot like publishing? So when I'm asking this question about what's unfair and fair, yeah. I mean, there's an expectation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, publishers, I mean, you want every book to succeed and achieve whatever goals are set up for it. But everybody has a publishing mix. You've got ones that feel like more of a sure thing. You've got this middle group that's something in between. And then you got those who are like, hey, you know what? We got not much, we don't have much to lose here. We're going to get everything we got on it. But it's, I mean, if it didn't work out, we're frustrated too, but that is a lot how the mix is. It's a publishing mix.
Yeah. And every publisher I've worked at has had the same conversation where you have your A-list. We know that this is going to sell tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of copies. And so you can kind of build a budget off of that. And then you have these ones that you're like, it's not going to make us any money. If it makes us any money, it's gravy. But it's that middle third, or maybe it's probably more than a third, middle like 60%, that's you hope that some of them hit. And if enough of them hit, you're doing great. If a few of them hit, you're all right. If none of them hit, what are you doing here? You didn't do your job very well.
You're updating your resume.
But it's. Yeah. I think people need to realize that publishers, a thoughtful publisher, it's more like investing in a startup than it is like a straight up gamble. Like you're looking at it and going, is the business model, the content, the platform?
He's just trying to the author. This thing.
He's pretty good. He's doing well. Let him go.
Thanks, Statler and Waldorf. I really appreciate your commentary. But it's so you're looking at all these things to say, if we put money into publishing this, are we going to get a return on our investment ultimately? And it's, you hope that that in the end, the money you've put in has paid back plus some for every book, but you know that it's only going to hit on some of them.
Yeah. Two of the wisest people in publishing, I won't name them because it's not helpful, but one of them said the exact same thing. Like, I just feel like this is just a crapshoot sometimes. I'm like, but you're the publisher. You shouldn't be saying that. Not here. This is not here. And one of the others just said, listen, you know, I remember coming into his office one day. I said, man, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, you know, and this person's been in the industry for 40 odd years. And he just kind of looks at me and says, well, what makes you think I know what I'm doing? You know, and which I'm laughing because, you know, I know that he's incredibly brilliant, but at the same time, like, we're all learning. His point was like, listen, we're trying to figure this out. No one has, again, that silver bullet and what this should be, but we're trying to figure this out. And
well, I will say part of the reason why we're talking to you is because publishing has shifted and changed so much in the last, 10 years, then 5 years, and even the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And you guys continue to be successful. And you had one of your best years ever last year. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're talking to you.
Yeah, if last year had been a terrible year, you wouldn't be here, Dave.
Jennifer, if you're listening, you're on next.
I think one of the things authors should expect of publishers is they should expect. So, you know, we were just talking about how publishers are sort of, we don't really know what we're doing, but we still should know more than the authors. Like, we should be able to add to the author. So when an author comes, even if an author has a really creative, well thought out plan for launching a book, for promoting a book, the publisher should still know things that the author doesn't know to say, what if we took that and did this with it or tried it in this venue? Or, I mean, so you take an instance like, The Martian. So mm-hmm. he has success in sales. I'm just six sales. Yeah. Let's go with
six
that.
Six sales. Wow, that's a whole new book. I like it.
Hashtag six sales. Yes. Yep, we'll go with that.
Six sales.
I'm going to coin that one.
Will you spell that one?
No.
No, we need to.
S-U-C-C-E.
It could look really bad.
S-A-L-E-S. Yeah. Like that. Something like that.
Zig Ziglar's new book. Wait a minute, he's resurrected. Okay.
So he had success in sales all by himself. So what a publisher needed to do was figure out how to introduce that success elsewhere. So what he needed to expect of the publisher is not, you know, is to simply expand the awareness of this. For somebody like me, who's not an A-list author, who knows a little bit about launching books myself, I come in and I want to hear all the ideas that a publisher has to say, oh, there's two or three that I never thought of. That's a great fit with who I am. And then I think authors should also expect publishers to throw out a bunch of harebrained ideas, because that's how good ideas come up. You throw 30 ideas on the table and three of them are really good. So they're going to come out and say, well, what if we did this thing? And the author has to be able to say, that one's me, and I'm good with that one. And those other 27, maybe not. Maybe save that for a different project. All right, this one will be a fun one. This is the speaking of Statler and Waldorf. This is the we all get to be grumpy, which is my favorite kind of question. What is your least favorite trend in book marketing today?
Man,
use names.
Sure, totally. Let's back
no
up.
Harm done.
11 years ago, I want you to know how proud I was of my MySpace campaign I did on a book. So I just want you to know.
Well, 11 years ago, that might have been useful.
That was cutting edge. Exactly. Yeah. 11 years ago, Facebook existed, but it was just for college students at the time.
Unless you lied. What? About your age.
Oh, that's
well,
true.
I think unless you lied when you started, age. You had to have a .edu address.
That's true.
Yes, it's true. But if you were hiring interns and you wanted to check up on them.
Oh, wow.
And you still did maintain an EDU address. Then you could basically.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, fair enough. Man. So 11 years ago, MySpace.
Yeah. Well, the point is, like, there's going to be a shiny new thing out there every day, like tomorrow and so on. So, people are going to ask, like, what's the most effective? I'm asking questions. I'm adding, like, more questions.
That's okay. Now fire away.
People ask, like, what's the most effective social media tool out there to sell books? Facebook. I mean, people buy books mostly on Facebook. Yes, even in leadership. What?
It's got book in the name.
It does. I know. So, Twitter builds influence. Instagram sure does in terms of image, but Facebook at the end of the day.
Yeah, those are better awareness tools, not as much content engagement tools.
Again, they're all important. They're all part of a book campaign, but people ask, like, what should I focus on? I'm like, well, focus what you're honestly comfortable with, but at the end of the day, if you want to know how are you getting the most clicks to buy a book, it's going to be Facebook. Yeah. So, which... kind of leads back to like bookmarking today trend. People are trying out social media things all the time. But if I were to sum up trend, it actually is, man, I want to make a bestseller push. I mean, and I know that sounds, why is a publisher saying that's a bad thing? It's just, all right, so you mentioned budget, you mentioned time, investment. I would rather see a campaign that has a really good lead up, that has a solid launch, but also there's a great plan that leads you through the first 12 months and beyond, because I know it's hard for a publisher, it's hard for an author to stay committed to, but it's so important because you can't assume everyone's seeing something right at launch. Right. And usually it's just because, they want to hit a list or they think that's how everyone else is doing it. So that's how to do it. Bestseller lists have a great value. They do. It gets awareness. It gets recognition. It's great to help an author get seen to speak more or do other things. So I love
social proof.
Yeah, I love bestsellers lists. I do. They're also, they can be very difficult to hit sometimes. And so when someone doesn't hit it, they may have sold a lot of books, they realize, I'm a failure. I haven't done well. And my encouragement is to say, guys, that's
the wrong metric.
Exactly. I said, if you hit it, awesome. That's great. That should never be your only goal. That's my point to it. That's why they say, if we don't hit it, then it's a complete failure. No, you can't look at it that way. So
I think the least favorite trend for me is what we were talking about at the beginning, that sort of gross platform stuff where authors do not sit down and think about themselves what social network they are part of, what relationships they have, with the things that they already do well, and sort of what is true to the voice that they offer. And they go into, oh, I'm going to do a launch team, and there's going to be this email campaign, and there's going to be all of, you know, all of these different pieces, none of which has any resemblance to why people should buy their book. Because it's not, it's not them. And so it's the disingenuous sort of like shifting from I'm trying to share a message or a story or whatever it is, to I'm a lever pulling marketing machine and sort of soulless in the process. And that those things do work numerically. You can move, you can get more Amazon ratings that way. You can see a spike, you can see a spike in sales. You can, they work. But I think the cumulative effect over time is that you lose credibility, you lose voice, and your books are not taken as seriously. Whereas if you can figure out an honest, authentic content marketing strategy that's built around you as a person, you as an author, you as a voice, it will continue to, it'll be a much slower build, but it'll be a more effective and stronger build over time in terms of how people see you and your content.
Well, you're different too.
In lots of ways.
In lots and lots of ways. But I would say that you're not only an author, you're a writer.
I hope so.
I agree.
I try.
There's a difference. And so you are naturally, I think, going to be more of a slow burn.
And also a bit of a snob.
Yes.
A bit.
Easy bit.
Well, no, I mean, but I think, well, again, we're getting back into the content development side of things here, but that's part of marketing a book is, I mean, content should market itself. The best marketing is great content, period.
Agree.
Because, but there's a lot of trash books that sell a lot of copies. Because they were marketed well, or because there's a big splash around them. But that's, and for me as an author and writer, that's frustrating because I like to try to be better than those books. Yeah. So, but I think that's another thing is just your best marketing is writing a book that people want to read from page one to the last page, and they don't get two thirds of the way through and go, oh, I'm tapping out. This is fluffy. This is dry. Whatever. Like, better content is better marketing. Period.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I think people get really, really confused by how to utilize content sometimes. And my encouragement always to them is, man, just again, like, it's continue to be true to yourself and what is you?
You and Oprah.
Yeah, I know. I love it, man. Oprah's my gal.
Dave there Winfrey. And so, you get a marketing deal. No. And you get a marketing deal. And
I was
going to
make a
deal.
Point. Come on.
Sorry.
I was going to make a point.
Sorry.
All right. So what is not changing? All right. So let's go back to Dave's MySpace winning moment. All right.
Yes.
to now. You know, it has not changed at all. It's just books are recommended because of good content and word of mouth. And I know that, like, we talk about that word of mouth all the time, but that's the only way a longstanding bestseller happens is because someone you trust, which could be your neighbor, your friend, whomever it is, has told you need to read this. Like,
sometimes multiple people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I just finished reading Ragamuffin Gospel by Brendan Manning. That book is 30 years old. It came, I think, 89 or 90 it was released. The first person who recommended that book to me recommended it to me when I was 17 or 18 years old. And then Scott Sauls on this podcast talked about how much he loved Brendan Manning and mentioned that book. And I was like,
talking about reading widely.
Yeah.
And he gave some really good book recommendations that you would not expect from Scott
but
Sauls.
That book continues to be an incredibly strong seller. I mean, it's, again, because the content is so good and so strong that 30 years later, people are going, no, you really need to read this book. I mean, I got done reading it and would now happily tell anybody, you need to read this book. And that's based on just the profound quality of that content. It's so good.
Yes, there are people that will recommend a book, and I know that I'm not going to read that book.
Yeah.
It's equally As well.
You have to know the person who's recommending.
Yeah, because they may have recommended me a book before and I got it and I'm like,
what? Or you just know that the books they connect with are different than the ones you do. Yeah.
So there's three people that if they tell me it's going to be an awesome book.
I was just going to say, like, you know, definitely have your core group of people. Yeah. Like, man, like, I'll read anything you tell me that's good. Yeah.
Totally. All right. So if you could give one piece of advice, and Dave, for you, you've already given really strongly one piece of advice, which is be yourself, be yourself, be yourself. Mm. But one other piece of advice to an aspiring or current author about launching a new book, what would it be?
You've got to think of that one reader out there and don't think about the masses. Don't think about anything else. Think of that person you want to write to. And that includes everything, all the marketing that you're doing, all the, you know, going back to the whole writing process, the actual book, like just think of that one person. And that could be, you know, that's what you look at dedications, you know, which I mean, yours, your mom, right? Mm-hmm. Curious Christian was your mom. And so you clearly,
actually read it. But she read the dedication. I know she read that. I don't know if she read the book.
Yeah. No, but it's important because you're thinking like, who's inspiring me? Who am I thinking about once this? That's why you see a lot of people who dedicate to their kids, their wife, their whomever out there that they absolutely love. And it could be like someone in their congregation who constantly is coming to them and needs help with something. Like, think of that person and don't get too worried about, oh, my marketer gave me these four or five target markets that we're going to go after. Just again, like, don't worry too much about how complicated it can be. And just
that's a great piece of advice. Let publishers go after markets. You connect with readers.
Yes.
That's a great piece of advice. I think, I had one in my mind now, just it totally disappeared. I think, I mean, I already mentioned you just write better books. I mean, that's, you can't launch a book. You can launch a bad book, but then it just, who are you at that point? Oh, that's what it was. If you are still you the day after launch. So as an author, there's this sort of, even if you wouldn't verbalize it, there's this expectation that launching a book, seeing that ranking on Amazon, seeing all those 5-star ratings, whatever, is going to change your life, and it won't. You're still you at the next day. And I don't say that to be depressing, but simply to say this, you need to see this as sharing content with people, not as a climbing the ladder in some way. You're not climbing any ladders. You have to do something meaningful with your words, share them, and the launch is simply a vehicle to put the words in people's hands. So, because otherwise you're going to wake up the next day, the next week, your ranking starts to tick back down because there's somebody else has done a successful book launch and outranked you. And we have a 24-hour news cycle and like a 72-hour sales cycle for books. And you still go about your business and you're still you. And so is the content something that you believe in enough to say it's out there now? Let's let it do its work.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great. You know what I love? I love working with authors when I, as a marketer, have this idea in my head, or I've kind of outlined what I would like them to say, and we have this back and forth, and suddenly it becomes having the author. I'm like, okay, I get the overall idea. I want to rephrase this that feels the most me, because they start thinking about that person out there. Mm-hmm. Think about like, well, how's it just going to come flow most naturally to them? Like, great. Suddenly we're working really well together. Working with Maria Goff on her book right now, like that's how our interaction's been. Like, I'll have an idea and she'll come back, say, okay, this is what I like. I'm going to tweak this. This is going to feel really good here. I love our kind of plan as we're moving it. But I realize I can't do all that by myself. It's funny. It's very humbling. I'm like, but we're talking, we're working on this together. And
well, she
connects.
She's sort of a unique author to work with as a publisher, because
as a first-time author,
she has such a strong sense of ministry and self. I mean, she and Bob together that she would say no quickly to an idea. If you were like, well, what if we did this harebrained idea? You know, she's not going to be like, well, okay, you're the publisher.
Yeah.
She's like, no, I'm sorry. That's not who I am. And that is a, you know, that has to be a standard for authors. I'm sorry. That's not who I am.
Exactly. And that's a great lesson. Like, yeah, I mean, don't just assume your publisher knows every bit of you. You've got to speak up. You've got to share how you really feel about that.
All the way through the process.
All the way through.
So the editing process, the cover design process, authors, you have permission to be a royal pain in the butt, and publishers may be annoyed at you, but your book will be better for it. So If any of our editors are listening, I'm sure they're like cringing. But Devin.
We love Devin.
Any closing thoughts, Todd? Any benedictions? Right. Any pieces of advice?
You feel good? You're ready to launch your book?
Are you ready to write your book?
My problem is I keep rewriting it. And that's my problem with writing in general, is I do have so many ideas and those ideas change. Or like this morning I presented a nine box to our team for like the third time, and it's a third iteration of a nine box. The problem is I tend to get more and more in the weeds as I go. Like the first time I write it is probably the best time, not when I go back and write it again. So yeah, that's my biggest.
Just gotta pull the trigger, man.
Just gotta let it go, man. I know.
Just gotta be you, Todd.
The thing is, what he's describing is him.
That's part of the reason he's good at his job is because there's this constant sort of forward motion, revision,
and
changing.
You keep making it better, which is gonna be very tough because you're like, man, when do you let it go and just say that's what it's gonna be?
It's a refinement, but then sometimes it gets too far in the weeds of refining.
I think you also need to put it in somebody else's hands so that you write a draft and then let them say this needs more in the weeds, this needs less in the weeds.
An editor. So I was hinting that direction.
I probably shouldn't edit myself. All right, listeners, I hope that was beneficial to you. If you don't give two cares about writing or publishing or anything, you didn't stick with us all the way to this point. So if you're still listening at this point, that means that you, this is an investment for you.
And now we're going to reveal the secret.
That's right. All right. But thanks so much for listening. As usual, we appreciate that. You know, one thing we haven't done in a while is asked you to jump on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. That is beneficial to us in terms of other potential listeners discovering the podcast because of the way that iTunes does algorithms. And when they look at it and they see all of these great reviews that you have left us, it makes us look really, really good. So
the other way is how books sell, which is just telling someone about us or recommending a particular episode.
Yeah.
You're like, oh man, so not this episode.
So share this on awesome. your preferred social media feed. Drop a link into the episode. Use the hashtag 5LQ. You guys are great at sharing already, and we appreciate that. And so the more you do that, the more we appreciate it. And thanks so much for listening. Tune in next time.
Before you go, we want to remind you about the free e-booklet, Pipeline, Succession at Every Level. If you want to develop leaders at every level of your church, this booklet is for you. To download, go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there.